This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We're past the gift buying part of the year, but maybe you're still looking for a good book. Maybe have some time to relax with a good book over the next week or so. Well, we have some ideas for you. Jenny Roan is a cell biologist at University College London, author of three novels, and editor of the website lablit.com. She's also founder of the nonprofit science advocacy group Science is Vital. Jenny, so glad to have you back on the show again.
Oh, thanks, Heather. It's great to be here.
Let's start off by defining lab lit. This isn't quite sci-fi. This is definitely fiction about science or scientists. But how do you define that term?
Well, yes, it's definitely not science fiction. We define it as a novel or a film or any kind of fictional work that's about science as a profession, which features scientists as central characters. So science fiction doesn't always have scientists in it. So you can't say that science fiction is lab lit. Lab lit is about a profession. It can be set in the past, it can be set in the present, but anything in the future gets a little bit too sci-fi. So that's usually how we define it, although there are many shades of gray.
You edit this website where you keep track of newly published or newly discovered lab lit, these novels about scientists as people. Why do you think it's so important that we have this kind of literature, these kinds of books or movies or portrayals of scientists?
Well, if you look at the list on the website right now, there are only about 200 books ever written with scientists as central characters. And you might think, like I do, that that's a little bit strange, considering that there are many, many thousands of scientists roaming the planet. And what we do is central to the world today, you know, technology and healthcare and food security. All of these things are being helped by science. And there are so many scientists out there. Why aren't there more novels about them? That's what I wondered when I set up the site. It's a massive profession. There are so many people in it. And it just seemed really strange. It was a void. I thought it was a very strange void, and I wondered why it was like that.
Well, I have to say that of the several book recommendations that you sent to us, I had never actually heard of any of these books. So I'm excited to add a bunch of these to my reading list. Let's start.
Oh, good.
let's start with Coffin Road by Peter May. Give us a quick overview of this one.
So this is your classic man washes up on a beach scenario and doesn't remember who he is. I guess it's been used before, but it's a really great premise. So this scientist washes up on a beach. He has no idea who he is. And it soon unfolds that there's a corpse in a nearby island. He's desperately trying to find out who he is and what's happened. I don't want to give any spoilers, but it does turn out that he is a bit on the run from an evil corporation.
All right. Sounds like a great thriller. But you actually say this is maybe actually anti-science propaganda somehow in this book.
Well, I got a bit of an uncomfortable feeling that the author, Peter May, was lobbying his readers, sort of an environmental lobby job. Now, I'm as environmentalist as the next person, but I do like this sort of thing to be evidence-based. And in the book, there's a subplot about bees. So the whole thing hinges upon the bee population and why it's dying. You've probably heard that there is something called colony collapse, in which bees are inexplicably dying. And a lot of people think it's due to these neonicotinoids, which are these particular kind of pesticide, and that's central to this novel. However, the way that it's portrayed is very, very inaccurate. So it implies that these chemicals are definitely the cause of wild bee population drops. There's no gray. It's all black and white. So this pesticide is evil. The companies that make it are evil. Anyone who doesn't believe that this pesticide is causing the problem is evil. It's a really sort of, it is propaganda in a way. And the science that's in the book is a little bit misleading. So I found that uneasy, because obviously authors can write about whatever they want. You know, if they have an agenda, it's fiction, they should feel free to exercise that. But I felt a little bit uncomfortable that I was being steered toward this sort of conclusion that I don't think is completely accurate or justified by the evidence at the moment.
I'm talking with scientist and author Jenny Roan about Lab Lit. That's fictional portrayals of scientists as people. Couple of love stories on your list, Conrad and Eleanor. This actually came out last year, but is out in paperback this year. So give us the synopsis on this one.
This is a very interesting story of a marriage between two scientists. which is a quite unusual premise for a book, I must say, in the lablet genre.
Although not that unusual a scenario within the sciences these days.
Absolutely not, because scientists are in the lab all the time. Usually they just meet the people they work with. But what's turned around about this is that it's the woman who's very ambitious and very successful, and it's the man who's sort of floundering and not doing very well in his career, which is quite unusual because typically in these scientist pairs, women make sacrifices, they have kids, and the men tend to go ahead more quickly. So this is an interesting twist on a normal story, and I found it a fascinating portrayal of people who lose at science. We often hear about the winners, the heroes, the Nobel laureates, but you don't often hear about what is incredibly common in our profession, which is that most people drop out and just don't make it. They're just not either good enough or they're not obsessed enough. And Eleanor, who's the woman in this pair, she is completely obsessed by her job. She cares more about her job probably than her own kids. The husband is left looking after the kids, which he actually enjoys doing. It's an interesting idea to look at what happens when you have this kind of dynamic in a relationship. Obviously, there's going to be jealousies and guilt, and it all comes out in this story. Not a lot happens, really. There's an animal rights subplot, which is sort of interesting. But it's basically a forensic dissection of a marriage, and it I think it would appeal to anyone, not just people who are interested in science.
It just so happens that the obsession is science. It could be an obsession with any career, really.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
All right, what about The Comet Seekers? Another love story here, but at the beginning of their relationship, maybe.
This one is a little bit strange. At the beginning and the end, it's very cyclical, like the comets that circle our planet, you know, more or less frequently, coming back either, you know, every 100 years or 1,000 years. The narrative of the story circles around, and it's based on comets. So every time a particular comet arrives, we get a chapter about what's happening in these people's lives. It's hard to say. It's a little bit strange. This book is a little bit strange, I will admit. It's magic realism. Not everybody likes that. I'm a little bit on the fence about magic realism. The main character, Roisin, is a female astronomer, and the man she's enamored with, or not so enamored with, is Francois, and it's all about their lives. And again, we see a female obsessed with her career and a man sort of struggling to cope with that.
You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. I'm talking with scientist and author Jenny Rohn. She's editor of the webzine lablit.com. All right, The Comet Seekers also had kind of a polar science theme to it. So let's stick with that. Under a Pole Star by Steph Penny, again, out this year. And this one's actually maybe a little bit inspired by real events. And again, focusing on a woman.
Yes, yeah, it's funny how it happened that way. That's true. I must say that Arctic lablet is almost a subgenre in itself. It's really, really popular to have lablet novels set in the Arctic or the Antarctic. But that's an aside.
Wouldn't have guessed that necessarily.
Yes. Well, you know, it's a great plot. It's a great place to have a story unfold because it's usually quite a beautiful, stark, extreme environment. Yeah, this is yet another story about a female. This is set in the Victorian era, though, and it's Flora Mackey, who is basically raised by a father who's a whaler. So her mother dies at an early age, and she's basically stuck on the boat with her dad. They go sailing off to the Arctic, and she becomes obsessed with the Arctic and exploring it. But she's not allowed to because she's a woman. She ends up having to marry somebody to help get her on an expedition. And when the husband is injured, she is put in charge of the expedition, which is very uneasy for everybody who works for her and other explorer groups who encounter her along the way. So they can't even deal with the fact, oh my God, there's a woman in charge, what do we do? It's a really interesting story. I would say it's not based on real life events, although they do allude to some of the famous expeditions. It's completely fictional. This never happened.
All right, next one is maybe a little bit less loosely based on reality and definitely not a female protagonist. This is The Last Pilot by Benjamin Johncock, about the dawn of the space age and the first test pilots. I mean, do test pilots count as scientists?
It's interesting because these test pilots, so these are airplane pilots, not rocket pilots or astronauts. And they actually, although they're just the test pilots, they're also the engineers. They're in there fiddling with all the machinery. They're really involved in not only flying these things, but actually designing them. So yes, they are scientists and engineers. And I absolutely had no idea that people were going up into space in airplanes before rockets were invented. So it's fascinating. Imagine just going higher and higher until suddenly you're in space and you're weightless in an airplane. It's really scary and kind of gut-wrenching. And I love this story because, well, it's first of all, it's set in the Mojave Desert. It's very evocative. It's very, again, a very stark, extreme environment. And these pilots and their poor families, every time they go up, the family never knows if the pilots are going to come back down again.
It had to have been incredibly nerve-wracking. I mean, we still do have test pilots. Must still be incredibly nerve-wracking.
Definitely. And there is some real life history here. You hear about real astronauts. But there's kind of a rivalry between the pilots and the astronauts. These astronauts are the Johnny-come-latelys. So they're trying to steal all the glory. But they're just glorified. They say something like they're just glorified, you know, bus drivers. They just sit in a tin can and get shot up. They don't actually do anything scientific.
And there's apparently one character that you really enjoyed who turned out to be real.
I was shocked, actually. Yeah, her name is Pancho Barnes, and she runs the Happy Bottom Riding Club, which is this bar for the test pilots. So after you come back from your near-death experience, you go get drunk down at her bar. And she turns out to be a real person. She was born in California, a very privileged, aristocratic upbringing. And then she ended up just wanting to fly. And so she learned how to fly. And then she got mixed up in the Mexican Revolution, was doing sort of gun running and had to dress up as a man to escape, and ends up forming a union for the first Hollywood stunt pilots. Just all sorts of crazy things happened in her life. And she's a real character in real life and in this book. She's a really wonderful character. And I think she just makes the book, actually, because the rest of it's a little bit morose and depressing, I must warn you.
Sounds like she needs a book all to herself.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm talking with scientist and author Jenny Rohn. She's editor of the website lablit.com. Coming full circle here, a thriller, but this one very much grounded in reality, The Last Days of Night by Graham Moore, again out in paperback this year.
This is a really interesting story. It's basically a sort of a courtroom drama focused on Paul Cravath, who is this young up-and-coming lawyer. And his first case turns out to be the most important patent dispute of the century, namely between Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse, who were fighting over who invented the electric light bulb. And this might sound like a really boring premise for a novel, but it's electrifying, no pun intended. It's so exciting because you're drawn into sort of the patent dispute, you're drawn into the science, you're drawn into the whole battle between alternating current and direct current, which was a massive decision for the country, like who would win? Nobody knew.
Anything that can actually draw you into AC versus DC has got to be fabulous writing.
Totally. And it did. It does. It really does. And everybody's larger than life. It's got this roll up your sleeve, American can-do attitude. The inventors are larger than life. And when you get to the end and you look it all up in Wikipedia or you read the authors afterward, you find out that almost everything in there is completely true. Everything. And I've never read such an accurate historical Lablet portrayal before. I really thought half the stuff was made up. It was so interesting. But no, it was real.
Nothing is as strange as reality, I guess. I mean, where do you draw the line? The Lablet is supposed to be fictional portrayals. We've actually seen a kind of a string in the past few years of nonfiction portrayals, specifically of women in science. I'm thinking, Hidden Figures, which was a huge movie box office hit last year, also, of course, a book. This year, we've had The Glass Universe by Davis Sobel, the kind of early history of women at the Harvard Observatory, and now out Code Girls about the women code breakers of World War II. I mean, all of those they're history, they're biography, they're not actually fiction, but have been really quite popular.
I think that historical portrayals that are fictionalized, if you will, such as biopics, Hidden Figures was fantastic, by the way. Anything that makes the history into a story that's got a real narrative arc, we generously put that into the Lablet definition. I think that biopics are fair game if they're done well, and not if they're not just a documentary, but they're a story. So Hidden Figures, for example, was just absolutely heartbreakingly wonderful and beautiful portrayal of these mathematicians at NASA, and it did more than 1,000 textbooks on the subject could have done. It made you really care about these people and get angry and upset and sort of enlightened all at the same time. So, yeah, it's not fiction, but it kind of is.
Well, so we had Hidden Figures was last year. The year before that, we had The Martian. really hasn't been anything comparable, though, this year, has there, at least in terms of movies?
No, there's been hardly anything. I was a bit disappointed by that. The closest thing we have is Arrival, which was just the end of last year. It's science fiction for sure, but the portrayal of the linguist is absolutely fantastic. So realistic, down to the way that they give the aliens these nicknames, Abbott and Costello. That's exactly what a real scientist would do. There's whimsy, there's passion, and there's the sort of scientific detective story trying to piece together the language of these aliens. So definitely not lab lit, but a really, really good portrayal of a scientist on screen. But you're right, aside from that, there's been nothing.
All right, last but not least, you actually have your own third novel coming out soon. So tell us a little bit about that one.
It's called Cat Zero, and it's out on the 1st of February. And I'm absolutely thrilled about this novel. It's sort of a conceit, but I wanted to write about my PhD research topic, which was this incredibly obscure cat virus. It was just going out of fashion when I started my PhD. It was completely dead by the time I finished. I did some really great work with it, but it was very strange working with a virus that's gone out of fashion. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to write a novel and elevate feline leukemia virus to its rightful place in history? So yes, it's an adventure story about an academic scientist. She's a woman, and she's mired in this sexist institution studying this backwater virus that nobody cares about. And then cats start to drop dead from a mysterious disease, and suddenly it all becomes very relevant.
It sounds like a lot of fun, and I have to say, I've heard of Dance Your PhD Thesis. I've never heard of Write Your PhD Thesis as a novel. I think that's taking it a whole step further. So,
very therapeutic.
Congratulations on that. Jenny Roan is a cell biologist at University College London, author of three novels now, editor of the website lablit.com, and founder of the nonprofit science advocacy group Science is Vital. Thank you so much, Jenny, and Merry Christmas.
You're very welcome.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.